from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the Senate revisited West Virginia's Medical Liability Act to add another health care position to the list of professions protected by a cap on malpractice awards. We'll meet the new chairs of the energy committees in both houses. Once minor committees, these now have a new status at the legislature. And we'll give you a preview of tonight's television documentary about children in poverty on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Senators voted on and approved four pieces of legislation today, including a bill that sparked a long debate Friday. Senate Bill 6 aims at closing a loophole in West Virginia's Medical Professional Liability Act for nursing homes, which senators stressed as key to protecting the state's medical community. The bill works to give health care administrators more protection when it comes to some hiring practices or staffing issues. The loophole has allowed administrators to face medical malpractice suits without the award cap put in place by the state's Medical Professional Liability Act. Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump explains the definition changes in Senate Bill 6, in addition to some new sections, bring administrators back under the $250,000 cap. Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler was the Senate Judiciary Chair when the original Liability Act came before the chamber more than 10 years ago. He says it was the most hotly debated tort and insurance reform issue at the time, but one that was needed for the medical community. This change, he says, is also needed to continue to protect those health care providers.
Many times we bust government and government intervention and government keep hands off and let the markets work all the time. But the free markets don't always work because I've heard it said that, you know, we need to run everything like a business. Well, government isn't a business. We have to serve people. We don't always have to worry about profits. We have to worry about people and delivering the needs for the people of this state.
Trump commended Kessler and other members of the body for their work during the passage of the Medical Professional Liability Act.
Who took courageous action to save the medical community in West Virginia at that time. This is an important and necessary step to make sure that the fixes that were put in place a dozen years ago continue to work for the citizens of West Virginia.
The bill passed on a vote of 31-1, with one senator voting against it. Senator Mike Romano of Harrison County cast the nay vote. He said Friday the bill did not go far enough to protect vulnerable patients from poor hiring practices at healthcare facilities. Two other health bills came before senators for a vote today as well. Senate Bill 335 is a governor's bill and one the chamber approved last year, but failed in the House of Delegates. The bill would allow emergency professionals like EMTs, firefighters, and police officers to carry drugs that can combat and often reverse the effects of an opioid overdose, saving a person's life. Opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, and heroin. Health Committee Chair Ryan Fearn says the risks attached to administering the drug are extremely low.
Mr. President, I think it's important to note that the administration of opioid antagonists is harmless if administered to someone who is not experiencing an overdose.
Even if an emergency responder gets the symptoms wrong, Fearn says, there is no risk to the patient. Senator Ron Stallings, the previous health committee chair, stood to back the bill as well and the benefits he sees for the state.
And I put to you that this is probably one of the most glaring, missing pieces of legislation. And again, West Virginia leads the country in opioid overdoses. I think this will go a long way. I'd like to remind the folks, though, that there is a companion bill to this called the Good Samaritan.
Stallings is referring to a bill he's introduced creating the Overdose Prevention Act. The bill extends some protections and immunities to people who call for emergency aid when a friend or loved one is experiencing an overdose, even if that person is participating in illegal activities like drug use at the time. Passing the companion bill, Stallings says, will put West Virginia on track with many federal recommendations for overdose protection laws. Senate Bill 335 to allow emergency officials to carry the overdose antagonist was approved 32-0. Senators also passed Senate Bill 7 today, requiring high school students complete at least 30 minutes of CPR training as a requirement for graduation. Education Chair Dave Seipold explained the bill calls on EMTs, firefighters, and other volunteers to go into schools to teach techniques approved by either the American Heart Association or the American Red Cross. In the House today, the Judiciary Committee began its discussion of a bill to strengthen domestic violence and sexual offense laws. Liz McCormick explains.
House Bill 2240 would insert language making an act of domestic violence or sexual offense by strangling an aggravated felony offense, leading to criminal penalties. By adjusting this language, the bill could potentially help a person or family involved in a domestic violence case get out of the situation sooner rather than later.
One of the studies that we looked at found a very high correlation between strangulation and later homicide. And the reason that strangulation was considered with the seriousness that it was in the proposed language is because of this correlation and the hope to prevent any additional violence in the future.
Danielle Swan is from the domestic violence community at the YWCA in the Kanawha Valley, and she's also an attorney in Charleston. She mentioned the bill could also cover someone who was strangled even without visible evidence of strangulation.
Strangulation actually requires very little force to cut off the air passageway. In fact, 10 seconds, a victim can lose consciousness, and in 4 minutes, they can lose all brain activity. And when looking at the bill and speaking with other experts on the issue, that's why no physical markings were required, because, in fact, strangulation actually requires very little force.
The bill concerned some delegates because the term strangling could be viewed as very broad, potentially affecting someone who was either protecting themselves or accidentally performing the act. Delegate Jeff Foster of Putnam County was one of the delegates who expressed this concern.
Let's suppose the person who began the fight had a weapon and pulled a knife on the other person, and the person who did this chokehold stopped him. Well, and let's say even the person with the knife actually stabbed the other person but caused no injury, as in cut their clothes or something like that. The person who choked them is then, in stopping that fight, is more guilty than the person that used the knife and tried to stab the person, correct?
And I'm back to yes, a prosecutor could charge several individuals. If I understand your hypothetical, you've got two combatants in a fight, third individual intervenes and uses a choke on one of those two individuals that were already fighting. All three of those individuals could be subject to prosecution for a variety of crimes, depending on how we decide to weave the facts of the hypothetical.
Other concerns were how the bill would affect things like high school wrestling matches, as well as someone dying while under erotic asphyxiation by a consensual partner. By the end of the meeting, three amendments were suggested to better narrow the definition of strangling. But Delegate John Schott, chairman of the committee, decided the concerns were too numerous to deal with in one day.
In view of the numerous amendments we have and the apparent high level of concern over this bill, we're going to refer this to our criminal working group, see, and encourage them to get with the domestic violence group and representatives of the prosecuting attorney's office and see if they can resolve some of these concerns that have been raised. I think they're all legitimate concerns, and rather than force through a bill that might have unintended consequences, we still have time to work this bill up.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Coming up, we'll meet the new chairs of the House and Senate Energy Committees and find out what issues will be before them during this session. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today.
Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 383, to allow hunting and trapping on private lands throughout the state on Sundays. Senate Bill 384, to permit the sale of wine by a wine specialty shop in a county that is not elected to permit the sale of wine or alcoholic beverages. Senate Bill 385, to allow and regulate transportation network companies such as Uber. And Senate Bill 387, to create a task force on the prevention of sexual abuse of children within the Center for Professional Development. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 249, to disallow voting by straight party ticket. On second reading, Senate Bill 284, to state the procedure when a chief law enforcement officer is required to certify the transfer or making of certain firearms. Senate Bill 312, to set a deadline by which candidates or their financial agents must file financial statements in order to avoid being disqualified as a nominee for the general election. Senate Bill 318, to amend the Wage Payment and Collection Act relating to the number of required pay periods in a month from once every 2 weeks to twice every month. Senate Bill 322, to remove the requirement of a mandatory electronic recount of ballots in recounts. Senate Bill 323, to extend municipal home rule to other cities. And Senate Bill 326, to eliminate the campaign finance reporting requirement for candidates for delegate to a national convention.
With Republicans leading both chambers of the legislature, there have been some obvious changes, like the speed with which legislation is moving. This year, both the House Speaker and Senate President have also chosen to elevate the Committee on Energy from minor to major committee status. We're joined this evening by the lawmakers appointed to lead those bodies through their work. Delegate Woody Ireland is a retired chemical engineer who was first elected to the House in 2006. He represents Ritchie and part of Pleasance counties. Senator Jeff Mullins owns his own consulting firm. He was elected to the chamber in the fall from Raleigh County. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me this evening. Let's start with that elevation of the Energy Committee from a minor to a major committee status. Delegate, why was that so significant? Why did the leadership choose to do that?
Well, it seemed to me that it was a recognition of the fact that energy is extremely important to West Virginia. We're the third largest exporter or producer of energy in the nation. And with it being a minor committee, we were only able to meet probably two or three times in the original minor committee schedule that we've used in past years. So with it now being a major committee, we have some staff, we have the time, and we can move some bills through the legislature that make sense for West Virginia and our energy community.
So, Senator, some of those bills have been taken up so far, including the one to repeal the state's energy portfolio status. Another bill that's on public hearing tonight, Senate Bill 4, House Bill 2004. Mm-hmm. That's a bill that kind of inserts the legislature into the process by which the environmental protection, by which the state will meet the Environmental Protection Agency carbon emission standards. You're spearheading that bill. You're the lead sponsor. What would you like to see that plan contain?
Well, as far as the SIP, I mean, what this does allows the legislature to review it prior to going to the EPA. So the DEP will still put together the SIP. It's just giving us the opportunity to review it prior to going to the EPA. So
what kind of things would you like to see the DEP include in their report? Uses of alternative energies, renewable energies, an emphasis on coal? What kind of things should be included?
Well, I mean, that piece of legislation will Can I just stop for a second?
We need to keep going.
Okay.
Delegate, do you want to take that on?
Well, what that does, actually, is, as Senator says, it injects the legislature into the process.
Right.
And what we would expect it to result in is a better plan that would impact all of West Virginia's energy communities. And you ask, what would we expect to see in it? I think we would expect to see some alternate energy capability. Solar panels, we ought to be using them. But we ought not to put artificial barriers around the use of coal and or gas. So those things are what's important to our energy community and to our jobs in West Virginia. So the DEP and EPA are going to have to obviously agree on what this is, but we'd like to have a voice in that.
So, Delegate, issue that that you expect to come before the committee on making the mining industry in the state more profitable. How do you see that coming forward in legislation? What kind of things will you all take on?
Well, there's several different pieces of legislation that we're pushing right now that will hopefully lower the cost to produce the coal. And that's what we're getting at right now, because right now, you know, AEP, 50% of the coal that they buy is from outside the state of West Virginia. So the goal is to reduce the cost of production. So therefore, you know, the coal mines in southern West Virginia and throughout West Virginia, AEP will start buying the coal from West Virginia mines, and we'll be more competitive. And that's the key.
And I think I'd like to add to that, and the Senator I know will agree, that our expectation is that we do that without sacrificing any safety issues. We're not, any of us, interested in having some miner hurt or killed, but let's look at those things that make sense, and if they don't make sense from a safety standpoint, then we're not going to push them.
Delegate, you've also, you come from Ritchie County, an area that's in the heart of the natural gas drilling industry right now. And there was an interim issue, that a bill that's been talked about and I know is still in discussion, about forced pooling. What do you expect that bill to look like when it actually comes before the legislature?
Actually, most people, the industry at least, would like to call that lease integration, fair lease integration, but some folks, of course, call it forced pooling. I have been involved and precipitated a number of meetings, including all the various stakeholders, or stakeholder groups anyway, including the industry, the royalty owners, the mineral owners, the landowners, the Farm Bureau, to try to understand where everyone is on this issue. And my expectation is we'll probably see a bill that is a combination of all those thoughts, probably not make anybody totally happy, but not make anybody totally go away from the table without something. So I suspect we're going to see a compromise bill, and I think it will be worked on the House side first and then moved over to the Senate for their working of that bill. So that's one that needs to be done, and a lot of folks don't understand there's already so-called forced pooling for the deep wells, which are everything under the Onondaga limestone, which includes the Utica. Now, the Marcellus lies right on top of the Onondaga limestone, so it's really a shallow well, so it does not have a pooling. The bill that I foresee coming forth would include all strata, deep and shallow.
Well, that is a bill that we will certainly be following as it comes through. Delegate Ireland, Senator Mullins, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for having us.
Just ahead, we'll preview a West Virginia Public Broadcasting documentary that premieres tonight. The first 1,000 days, investing in West Virginia's children when it counts. But first, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2526, to provide for the transfer of ownership, operation, and maintenance of the West Virginia Parkways Authority, including the West Virginia Turnpike, to the Division of Highways. House Bill 2528, to allow any resident of the state who has been employed as a coal miner for 10 years or more and has been laid off for 3 or more years in the last 10-year period, is eligible to receive a scholarship for tuition and fees at any accredited community and technical college in the state to be retrained in another skill or profession. House Bill 2529, to require the Commissioner of Agriculture to develop a pilot program for the cultivation of marijuana to be sold in states where sales are legal. House Bill 2534, to add sexual orientation to the categories covered by the Human Rights Act, prohibiting discrimination in employment and places of public accommodation. House Bill 2537, to provide for the chairperson of the Public Service Commission to be elected on a nonpartisan basis beginning in 2018. House Bill 2555, to provide legislators with information necessary for basic oversight of law enforcement agencies who obtain private property under state and federal forfeiture laws. The information will be available to the public. House Bill 2556, to provide medical and religious exemptions from mandatory immunizations for school children. And House Bill 2566, the Coal Jobs and Safety Act of 2015. Up for passage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 2200, to revise, rearrange, consolidate, and recodify the laws relating to child welfare and juvenile disposition. This bill was recommended for passage by the West Virginia Judiciary's Court Improvement Board. It's the product of a bipartisan effort of all the stakeholders to streamline the child welfare laws in the state. On second reading, Senate Bill 13, to provide that a property owner owes no duty of care to protect against dangers that are obvious, reasonably apparent, or well known to the person injured. House Bill 2010, to elect all justices to the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, all circuit court judges, all family court judges, and all magistrates be elected on a nonpartisan basis. And House Bill 2217, requiring that the labor commissioner has knowledge and experience in employee issues and interests, including employee-employer relations.
A quarter of West Virginia's children live at or below the federal poverty line. That's almost 100,000 children, more than enough to fill every seat in both WVU and Marshall's football stadiums. It's an extremely concerning problem, especially in light of the research that demonstrates how poverty can affect brain development in children. This is the subject of a new documentary West Virginia Public Broadcasting has produced called The First 1,000 Days, Investing in West Virginia Kids When It Counts. Award-winning producer John Nakashima set out to investigate the problem of child poverty in the state, and what he discovered and has documented is an overwhelming need of services and support for the very youngest and most vulnerable among us. Here's an excerpt from the film.
For me, when I think about the importance of the first years of life, or sometimes we'll say the first 1,000 days of a child's life, which is roughly up to their third birthday, it's just crucial. We know that the brain is under construction.
Most of a child's brain actually develops in the first 3 years of life. Somewhere around 80 to 85% of their brain develops in that period of time.
The synapses, the connections between the neurons in the brain, are forming more rapidly than they ever will again. And it's those synapses in the brain that form the architecture of the brain and the ability to learn. So if you have that architecture in place, learning is going to come easy to you.
We know when we see a parent who is playing with their child, say on a playground, or you might see out at the grocery store even playing a game while the child's in the shopping cart, most people would look at that parent and think that's good parenting skills is what you think of, or how great, look at that relationship between that parent and child. It's not just because the child wants them to. It's playing with them because that's what's going to help that child develop and move forward.
Hi, Nana.
Okay.
Do you want to talk to Nana?
And do well in school and get a job and get married and have their own children that are successful.
It's a concept that people call serve and return. So if you think about a tennis match, for example, somebody's serving the ball, somebody's returning it. So if you watch the dynamics between a very young baby and their parent or a caregiver, that child is reaching out, cooing, talking, trying to get the attention of the adult. The adult then tends to coo back.
Ew. Ew.
Talk back to the child, make a face, maybe extend their language a little bit, and you see that serve and return relationship between the parent or caregiver and the baby.
Fish. Is that what the fish does?
Those types of relationships are very important in the development of that child's brain structure in relations between the centers that talk to each other. It's actually something occurring at the molecular level in the brain, and it creates networks in the brain that allow those centers to talk to each other and create that higher order functioning in the brain.
The brain grows the most between 0 and 3. To 3 years old. So right there is that window that you want to get in there, and if there's a problem, you want to be able to find it then. The earlier you find it, the better the outcome is for that child. You know, you don't want to wait until 5, 6, 7 years old to find out something like that when they're going to school and now they're struggling and they're falling behind. You want to catch it before school.
That's an excerpt from The First 1,000 Days. The documentary explores early education programs in the state that help parents and caregivers make the most of a child's first 3 years of life. The television documentary premieres tonight at 9 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia will also be featured in another PBS program directly following tonight's premiere, A Path Appears. In the film, West Virginia native actress Jennifer Garner tags along with Save the Children's Mason County program coordinator as she brings books, developmental activities, and other critical support into the homes of local struggling families. A Path Appears airs tonight at 10 here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.